Now, when you walk into the ring for the number one heavyweight of the world, you'll be ready, won't you? Why? Because I waited for 50 years to make you ready. You'll be able to spit nails, kid. Like the guy says, you're gonna eat lightning and you're gonna crap thunder. You're gonna become a very dangerous person.
Our show's name pays tribute to the Boer Trekkers of South Africa, who in 1838 soundly defeated 30,000 Zulus on the bank of the Nkomo River, thereafter called Blood River, from the water turning red with the blood of the slain. Miraculously, no Boer Trekker died and only three were wounded. Now your friend, Eddie Miller, will be your ambassador for tonight's show.
Dear Blood River Radio family, thank you so much for hanging on. As promised, we tuned in to the second hour. We picked up my brother, Paul Fromm, who came in at the minute's notice. I'll tell you why he came in. I'd like to thank him so much on the air. Ben Walker was supposed to be in today, but he kind of the last minute he had to call in because he's sick. He's got a fever. He couldn't make it, so I just called Paul and asked him would he like to come in and help us out. He said, sure. He said, so here he is. And Paul's about the most dependable, rock hard person I know. I don't know anybody more dependable, more solid than Paul. But anyway, Paul, I'd like to thank you so much for coming in on a minute's notice, brother. And you said you had some things you wanted to talk about. So without further ado, without wasting any more time, brother Paul, come in to say hello to Blood River Radio family and take off and anything what you'd like to talk about, what you talked about during the break. Okay, go ahead, Paul.
Hello, Blood River family, my Damen und Herren, ladies and gentlemen, I have a few things to say about Germany. That's one of the areas that I've covered for a while, and some little-known facts. You know, you think of Germany, and you know a little bit about the German people. You know that Germanic tribes, the Angles, the Jutes, and the Saxons began to settle England with the collapse of the Roman Empire in 476. And so English is a Germanic language modified by the French invasion of 1066, and some remnants of Latin, plus other influences. But, you know, you think about the Germanic people have been around a long time, and that's true. But they didn't become a country until after the United States, not until 1871, led by a great man of vision, Count Otto von Bismarck. Did they unite the various German princelings, city-states, kingdoms, and so on, all under one rule, and they began, or what they would call a Reich or a state, and it became a country. So they've only been around a little over 150 years, and have come a very long way, have taken many, many hits along the way. It was a real act of insight to unite Germanic-speaking people into one country. And there was a revolution that went on after the Napoleonic Wars. When Napoleon was finally defeated in 1814, Europe began to change, and there was a revolution of a lot of young people in the Germanic states who became interested in, well, who are we as Germans? So they collected, they go around the countryside and collect folklore, hence the Grimm fairy tales, which were they're Germanic folk tales. And there were musicians and poets, and there began to be quite a ferment of German nationalism, that, well, we're all the same people, we should have the same country. And that's the story on a postage stamp of how Germany came into existence in 1871.
I'll tell you what, you know, like you said, Paul, earlier before you came in, Germany actually is, and it seems to go against conventional wisdom, Because when we think about Europe, when I say we, when I think about Europe, I think of the old country. Matter of fact, you hear all these mafia movies people talk about back in the old country, Italy, France, Germany, et cetera. But like you said that earlier before we came on the break, you said that Germany actually was about 100 years younger than the American Republic, and at least the Republic we used to have.
It would be, you'd make it 1776, right?
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. For the United States. And so Germany is just 90-plus years younger, you know, 1871.
And, you know, we mentioned also that America, the United States, missed having German as our official language by one vote. We had so many good Germans in the country. And I didn't realize that until some years ago, not that many years ago. Missed it by one vote. It's too bad we didn't win. You know, that one vote, if we spoke German, that could, it just dawned on me, that would have been the first and second world wars probably never would have happened because no one would have dared go against a Germany united with an American, with a German speaking mentor. Go ahead, Paul.
This is one of the moral failings of the white race. Germans were still a very large part of component of the American population in the First World War and the Second World War. Many of the war heroes, Eddie Rickenbacker, Admiral Nimitz, and a good many others were actually of German background and
Walter
not
Kruger.
Too long in the country. They were born in America, but they were essentially killing their cousins. And the same in Canada. We had a large German population, there was such fanaticism in the First World War. A city just north and west of Toronto is called today Kitchener, after Lord Kitchener, who was a major figure in the First World War. It had been called Berlin, and there were we went through a complete change of the population turning on the very large German minority here, and yet Canadians loyally trooped over to Europe in two wars to slaughter their cousins.
You know, speaking of many Germans, I heard I'll have to be the fact checker with the bitter ender. He was talking about Chesty Puller, I think it was. Was he commandant of the Marine Corps one time? Anyway, it was this fellow named Walter Kruger came over, immigrated from Germany when he was a kid. He enlisted as a buck private and fought, I think, in the Spanish-American War. He rose from buck private to full general. That's four stars, my friends, four stars. General Douglas MacArthur, no less than General Douglas MacArthur, said that he single-handedly, he being Walter, General, four-star General Walter Kruger, got the big campaign in the Pacific, like it led up to invading the Philippines. He gave full credit to Walter Kruger. And Walter Kruger was brilliant. He was an absolute genius. He came up as a buck private, E1, all the way up to the ranks. He had great empathy and sympathy for his men, for the foot soldier, and he was famous. He was known as the unknown general because he didn't get the credit he should have. But General MacArthur said he accomplished his goals with the fewest casualties of any American commander. And he's rarely heard of, but he came from also a general, who's not heard of Admiral Nimitz. The Germans called him, I think, Sir von Nimitz, because I mean this German after German after German. And you're so right, that is so sad and so pathetic. It reminds me of the war of Lincoln's war against the South. We had brother fighting brother fighting brother. And Will, what would you have to say about what Paul said? Will, go ahead, Will.
Well, I would like to jump in. I know we're going to.
Go ahead, Will.
Paul, this is Will. I just wanted to jump in and make a comment about Otto von Bismarck, and I appreciate you bringing him up, Paul. We've all heard about the Third Reich. Well, this is what Paul is talking about, is the First Reich. Am I right, Paul? This is the first unification of the German people. And Otto von Bismarck was, in German, the first Reichskanzler, which he was the Chancellor of Germany, just like Adolf Hitler later became Chancellor of Germany. And something that's very interesting to me about Otto von Bismarck, if you look at the history of him, he embraced something that he called the Kulturkampf, which is what he, the culture struggle of his people. And he was very ardent about making Germans German again. And one of the things that he really railed on was the influence of the Catholic Church. Otto von Bismarck was an ardent Protestant, an ardent Lutheran, and he really, really pushed the evils of the Catholic Church and wanted his people to embrace Luther and Protestantism. And if you look at all of that, that's eerily similar to what
happened.
Well,
hold on to that thought. We have to get to a quick break, brother. But don't lose that thought. You're going great. Yeah, I'll be right back, folks. This is a quick break.
This is Attorney Jason Robb, General Counsel of the Knights Party, based out of Harrison, Arkansas, and proud supporter of Blood River Radio. I, like you, am concerned about the destruction of our beloved America and our racial kindred people and our cherished liberties. As an individual and as a nation, liberty is what we seek. Liberty is important. It is what allows us to be independent, and if properly used, liberty allows us to fully worship God in all areas of life. And with that worship comes more liberty. We are on the verge of anarchy in this country, and personal liberty is looked upon as a crowning achievement of the people. However, Christianity and white law and order is viewed as the enemy of this newfound freedom, and that is why it is under attack. Learn more by listening to Blood River Radio every Saturday from 4 to 6 p.m.
As you are aware, America is divided over every fault line possible. This is intentionally fostered by those who do not love God, family, or country. We believe a peaceful future as a free people absolutely depends on civility. Clarion Call for Civility is looking for funding and volunteers at every level to make our hopes and efforts a reality. Please donate, sign our pledge, and help us in our sacred cause. Please visit callforcivility.com for more details. callforcivility.com.
Bypass the mainstream narrative with Liberty News Radio at libertynewsradio.com. Engage with charismatic hosts live or on demand. We cover the crucial news focused on God, family, and country. News that other networks simply refuse to use. Think of LNR's hard-hitting news and podcasts at your fingertips anytime, anywhere. Join us at libertynewsradio.com. Empower your day with the truth, because the truth will set you free. libertynewsradio.com.
Excuse me, Captain. I know this may sound silly, but can you fly? Nope. Never had a lesson.
Dear Blood River Radio family, I'm enjoying this so much. I tell you what, it is so pleasurable and so easy when you have expert, great people like we have on. The Lord really blessed me. He's got really good people, the finest people you can imagine coming out and pushing this battle, this tank, this artillery piece forward. Liking this, Blood River Radio is a cannon firing into the beast of global white genocide. So I'm so happy that we got my older brother. Well, he's not as old as I am, probably, Paul Fromm, and we have our younger brother, Will Franklin. I was saying, Will was really giving me a history lesson, and so was Paul. But Will, if we will finish your thought, then we'll go back to Paul. In fact, I'd like to, when you get there, I'm going to ask Paul a few questions about this the Second Sons organization. So go ahead, Will.
Yeah, no, I was what I was trying to do is to kind of make a point and to really get Paul's opinion on it. Of if you look at what von Bismarck did with the German people, of kind of what his intentions were, it was kind of the re-Germanization of Germany by bringing all of these city-states and provinces back together under one flag, one government, so to speak, and unifying Germany. And if you really look at Germany at the time, you know, with the economic down trodden, and that it was really ripe for that to happen. And to me, Paul, just as a student of history, looking at it, it was eerily similar to what was happening in the late 20s into the early 30s when we saw Hitler rise to power and become the Chancellor of Germany and do essentially the same thing. I was going to see, Paul, what's your opinion on that?
Well, you're absolutely right. He was trying to point out that the German people are more than just Germanic speaking people. If we are one nation, we can accomplish an awful lot more than as little kingdoms like Bavaria or little city states or counts, you know, like a small area of land ruled by a count or something like that. And, sure. And we must think of ourselves as Germans. So that was von Bismarck and the Kulturkampf or culture war battle.
Yeah.
Hitler had at least another concern. A lot of the German people had been chopped away by the Treaty of Versailles. About 100,000 were in Poland, what became Poland. Poland wasn't even a country in 1914. It became a country again, and with a German minority. Well, actually, it is, I think it was about 100,000. And they were very often very, very badly treated. And there were other German minorities in Bohemia and Moravia that became part of Czechoslovakia, the so-called Sudetenland, and the whole country of Austria, which had once been an empire, but now was hacked down to a real rump. And there was a lot of desire among those German people to join with the main body of German people. Hence the annexation of Austria, and that was ratified by a referendum, the annexation of the Sudetenland as a result of the Munich Treaty. And finally, Hitler had enough of the Poles' obstructionism and violence, and in September 1st, 1939, invaded. And the Poles would not have been so bad to the German minority if they'd not been egged on by the British and the French, who said, well, if Germany goes to war with you, we'll back you up. We'll declare war against Germany. Absolute bouncing off the wall insanity. The French army was demoralized and not in any great shape. The British army was pathetic, badly armed. They were in no position to make those boasts or those promises. And then when they felt, largely because of Churchill, they felt they had to keep the promises, it led to disaster both for the French and for the British. The British had their bums royally booted, and what was left of the British Expeditionary Force crawled its way to Dunkirk, and Hitler, for some reason, backed off. He could have massacred them, which probably wouldn't have been very good, or he could have imprisoned a lot of them, which would probably have been a better course, and he didn't. He let them escape, and because he was still hoping for peace with Britain. He didn't want a war. He didn't want a war on the Western Front, and
It was an act of mercy, right, Paul?
Yes, it was. Yes, it was an act
Absolutely.
Of mercy.
Yeah. It was an act of mercy, for sure. Paul, I want to interrupt your stream of conscience just for 1 second, and it was, I got cold shivers on the back of my neck as you were so aptly describing what happened with Poland and, you know, Czechoslovakia, the Sudetenland, and all of that. If you really stop and think about the geopolitics that was happening at the time, we could erase those names, whether it's Poland, Czechoslovakia, Germany, and we can insert names like Russia, Ukraine, the European Union, and it's very similar to what we have seen happening over the last 3-4 years now, where Russia has flexed and said these are Russian people. Historically, these were our lands. You know, the Minsk Accords of 2014 and that sort of thing. And they moved to take back their lands, and you see an outside force of these European nations telling this nation of Ukraine, we're going to stand by you. You can fight these people. Am I off base on that, or does it seem like it's the same old playbook, Paul?
That's a great analogy. Go ahead, Paul.
I so agree with you. I'm sympathetic to Ukrainian nationalism. They're a fine people, and they are a culture to themselves. I'm sympathetic to the Russians' concerns. They don't want to be hemmed in by NATO. And you know, we're right to be leery of Russia, but there's no reason for this fratricidal bloodbath that's going on, largely because the United States, under Sleepy Joe, egged the Ukrainians on. And they're not even led by a Ukrainian.
No.
Volodymyr Zelensky's a Jew. If I can just go off on a pet peeve right now.
Please do.
Go off, Fred. Please do. Yes, absolutely.
Which we get in Canada. And there's an ad that appears endlessly, slightly different forms, but this is an organization of Christians and Jews, and the poverty in the former Soviet Union, but now they cut that back to the Ukraine. The poverty is incredible. Holocaust survivors are in their 90s and they're starving and blah, 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 blah. Give money. And I think of all the shameless flimflams, if these people had anything to do, if they were in any way, form, shape, or form in touch with the German forces in the Second World War, they're on the gravy train of what in German we call the Hutengeld, or the Jew money or Jewish money. The reparations are incredible. These people would not be starving. This is a flimflam. And then I thought, they've been abandoned, so we're told. The president of the Ukraine is a Jew. If these people are really in need, and I totally doubt it, but if they are, why don't they take care of their own? I find this ad so insulting, and I know many well-meaning Christian people who are not very well informed will fall for it, and they'll send their $25 to get this old woman who's about to starve to death. Well, yesterday she had only one carrot to eat. She ate half the carrot yesterday, and now she had. I mean, it's the sort of garbage a teenager might write, but they pump this stuff up. It's been for months the same stuff, and some alleged Christian bishop comes on and says, "If your Christian faith would ever lead you to do something for God's chosen people, now is the time." And I thought, this is beyond plummet. If they're God's chosen people, then let God take care of them. My head spins. It is the most appalling garbage. And yet I know well-meaning people who might fall for it. They're older ladies, they're Christian, and these poor people. Well, I strongly doubt that they're poor people.
But it's dumb.
It's not your responsibility. It's Zelensky's responsibility. It's the Jews have their own state, Israel. Well, why don't they take care of their own? I mean, why would this be hustled on well-meaning American Christians or Canadian Christians?
You know, Paul, you're much kinder than I am. They're just dumb. They're just stupid. Like the Southern Baptists, and I love to pound the Southern Baptists. I can. My grandfather was a Baptist minister in the mountains of Kentucky. But I just tell people I forgive him because he didn't know any better. But he wasn't one of these Southern Baptists, though. I just looked up. And Paul, as you very correctly said, the Ukraine has a Jewish head honcho or Jewish president. And mm-hmm. Would anybody out there like to guess what percent? I just looked this up. What percent of Ukraine is made up of Jews? It says right here, as of 2018, the Jewish population in Ukraine was estimated to be 0.4% of the total population. But historically, before the evil Nazi invasion, Jews made up almost 5%. God, it is peak. It says it made up 5%. But right now, 0.4% Jewish population in the country, but has a Jewish president. What do you make it out of that, Paul? Oh, we got to go to a quick break, Paul. As soon as we come back, Paul, you can answer that question. We got to go to a bottom of our break. Be right back, folks.
would you like to help this program reach more people and earn silver at the same time? Call or text 801-669-2211 for complete details.
News this hour from Town Hall, I'm Mary Rose. A software fix had airlines around the world canceling and delaying flights. Correspondent Donna Warder reports.
Tim Johnson, policy director with the UK's Civil Aviation Authority, tells Sky News the update is considered precautionary but urgent.
It's not all of the A320 aircraft, it's just some of the variants with a particular configuration of them. And it's asked airlines to make sure this maintenance, this precautionary maintenance done is done as soon as possible.
It's considered a quick fix, taking most planes about 2 hours. More than 500 U.S. registered aircraft were affected, with American Airlines saying it completed most of the updates of its 209 affected planes on Friday. I'm Donna Warder.
There are new problems following a massive fire at a Hong Kong building complex. Correspondent Raf Warber reports.
Hong Kong authorities say that the terrible fire that ravaged a giant set of apartment blocks from Wednesday this week is now officially under control as of Friday morning. But the fallout remains. People are still without homes. The numbers of dead and missing are still not confirmed. So there's a huge aftermath which still remains. And for Hong Kong, which is such a densely populated place, so many people live in high-rise apartment blocks like this. Everybody is in distress about this.
Canadian Prime Minister Mark Carney and Alberta Premier Danielle Smith signed a memorandum of understanding on November 27th, 2025, to advance a new oil pipeline from Alberta to Canada's Pacific Coast. The goal is to ship up to 1 million barrels to Asian markets. More on these stories at townhall.com.
In today's fast-paced world, professionals face endless projects, deadlines, competition. To thrive, you need mental clarity, sharp focus, and reliable memory. That's why the same company that brings you Relief Factor created ThinkFactor. ThinkFactor is designed to help you think clearer and perform better daily. It's a powerful blend of nutrients that supercharges your memory and sharpens your focus. You can stay on top of your work and outshine the competition. After a couple of weeks of taking ThinkFactor, I noticed a dramatic difference in my clarity, my focus, even my memory. And you know what? The longer you take ThinkFactor, the better the results are. If you've ever felt mentally foggy or struggled to keep up with everything on your plate, well, ThinkFactor can help you reclaim your cognitive edge and thrive in your life. Call 800-4-RELIEF, 800, the number 4-RELIEF, or visit ReliefFactor.com, ReliefFactor.com, to order ThinkFactor. Call 800-4-RELIEF or visit ReliefFactor.com. Your first bottle, just $19.95. Think Factor. Think clearer. Perform better daily.
Introducing Managed IT Services from NPI. We offer top-notch data backup and recovery, email spam protection, and network security tailored to your needs and budget. With 20-plus years of experience in the medical field, our HIPAA-certified consultants know what it takes to protect sensitive information. Don't settle for less. Give us a call at 801-706-6980 and experience the difference with Managed IT Services. Remember, your IT support should be fast, efficient, and reliable.
Introducing PrepStartsNow.com, your ultimate guide to readiness and peace of mind. We offer practical preparedness tools, training, and education to take your family's household readiness to the next level. Browse the prep shop for essential products, check out our planning guides, and stay informed with our prep blog. Visit PrepStartsNow.com and subscribe to our emails for exclusive offers, new products, and future events. Remember, preparedness begins with PrepStartsNow.com.
During our war for Southern independence, the brilliant Confederate general Robert E. Lee foretold the decline of this country when he prophesied, if those people, referring to the dictatorial federal government, if those people win this war, the United States will become a bully abroad and a tyrant at home. As Lee predicted, it has come to pass. The principles laid out in our founding documents, our Declaration of Independence, and the individual rights protected in our Constitution have been vilified and discarded. But not everyone has surrendered. Blood River Radio brings you highly respected, intelligent guests not afraid to speak the truth when the truth in America today is censored and attacked. Your contributions keep us on the air in order to fight against the bullies abroad and the tyrants at home. Send your war contributions to Blood River Radio, P.O. Box 34636, Bartlett, Tennessee, 38184. That address is on our website, www.bloodriverradio.com. Don't let the bullies and the tyrants win.
What we've got here is failure to communicate. Some men you just can't reach.
Dear Blood River Radio family, thank you so much. Once again, I'd just like to say how blessed I am to have these two wonderful brothers on helping us push this cannon forward, buddy. But anyway, Paul, you said something earlier. You can talk about anything you want to, Paul, but I want to ask you about you. You mentioned this, the Second Sons organization, you said. They're having some type of protest. Go ahead, Paul.
A very new group, relatively new group, and that grew out of another group started by a Canadian veteran named Jeremy McKenzie, who's been very badly treated by our armed services. And they're nationalists, and they're very nationalist, and McKenzie makes it quite clear that this country was created by Europeans, by white people, and we have to keep it predominantly European. Well, that's exactly my position. Anyway, they're gathering together a fair number of young folks, and they stood on a major overpass about a week ago over the major east-west highway in southern Ontario called Highway 401, and with a banner, I believe it said deportation, mass deportations now. Well, there was, of course, an uproar. The local police denounced it as this could be hate, and some councillor denounced it. Then some cop went on about, well, this would make vulnerable minorities feel uneasy. Well, that's unfortunately the result of any speech. Anything you may say might make somebody feel uneasy. I'll tell you what makes me feel uneasy. When I go into a donut shop in the airport in Victoria, British Columbia, which is over 85% white, there isn't a single white person behind the counter. They're all East Indians. And right across this country, it's as if we've been invaded. It's a long story, but in the last few years of Trudeau, ever since COVID, we were being absolutely flooded. So the argument that, well, somebody might feel uneasy is no argument at all. That's too bad. You're an adult, tough kitty. Put up with it. There's lots of stuff that makes me feel uneasy, like when I see transgendered people in advertising. That makes me feel weird, feel uneasy, but nobody cares that I feel uneasy. But I put this up, and I did get on one of my forums, and I got a number of responses. But one response was, why are they wearing masks? So I wrote back, and I my own feeling is I don't like masks. But I have nothing to lose. I'm retired. They've done their worst to me, other than put me in jail. I don't give a damn. I'll speak my mind. But I don't think that's fair to say to somebody who's 25 or 30 who has a job. And what will happen if they are outed or doxed, as they say today, they'll almost certainly lose their job because the enemy will come after them, will go after their employer, and most employers have all the backbone of a strand of soggy spaghetti. They're gutless. And 40 years ago, most employers would take the view, well, look, what you do on your own time is your business. Not today. We live in essentially a communist state where you must appear to pay lip service to the bullshit and lies that govern our country.
You know, Paul, that I can testify that I rode to Charlottesville, what I like to call the Battle of Charlottesville, with a group of people. One of them I rode with was a fellow named Matt Goodwin, and he was one of our little brothers, much younger than me. But like I said, we went to Charlottesville together. We fought that battle together, shoulder to shoulder. When he came back, he had no job. His employer, somebody ratted him out and told his employer that he had gone to Charlottesville. He was fired immediately. Also, I have a friend of ours, R.G. Miller. R.G. Miller was a very intelligent man, very well-spoken, like much like you, Paul, and educated. He was the head of the chairman, Arkansas chairman of the League of the South. He lost his job. I could name you lots of people who were outed and lost their jobs. I'm like you. I'm older, and I just don't give a damn. I guess I'm dumb and hard-headed in some ways, but I just do not give a rat's ass. I'm not going to shut up. And when I hand out these flyers, I was handing out some flyers. I'll tell you a quick story, and we'll go back to Will. Some years ago, I was handing out, 2-3 years ago, I was handing out League of the South newspapers. The newspaper, the name of it is the Free Magnolia. Well, they advertise TPC and Blood River Radio in there. And so I was handing them out door to door in the very exclusive neighborhoods. And it just caused an uproar. It hit the fan. And people were saying, oh, they got your picture. They got your picture, Eddie. Papa, you've been out. And I said, well, I hope the hell so, because when I was handing out these newspapers, everybody and his mama, they have these doorbell cameras. When you come into their house, they have cameras everywhere. I would make sure I looked into the camera to smile, because I wanted them to get my good side. If they're going to get my picture, I wanted my good side to look. And, you know, if anybody said anything, I gave them the Southern salute, you know, with that middle finger, if they said anything unworthy. But I just walked across the lawns. I went right up to the door. I mean, it was great. I know one of our fellows here in Memphis, he was kind of afraid we were going to get kicked off of Liberty News Radio, because they run us on they just run us on Sundays now in the reruns. But I said, I don't give a rat's ass. There's no such thing as bad publicity, folks. The more publicity we can stir up for Blood River Radio, the better. Maybe we'll get some other listeners in there. But I just thought I'd give that funny anecdotal evidence. I never got any. I got some hate mail and hate speeches, but we never. If we got any supporters, I can't tell. But anyway, back to you, Will.
But on that theme, Eddie, I'm sympathetic. Like a lot of you, I sometimes go out on White Lives Matter protests, and I and another guy are the only ones that are not masked, as I say. I don't care, and the other guy is, you know, older too, and he doesn't care, but unfortunately, unless you're retired, independently wealthy, or you have a job where you're your own boss, like, you know, you're a an electrician or something, people are vulnerable. And I pointed that out to the critic. I said, you know, I don't like it. But I can't ask a 25-year-old to give up his job. That would be irresponsible leadership. And I had this conversation with Sam Dixon and a couple of others over 10 years ago. I said, what should we be telling young people? We want them to be activists, especially in their younger years when they're enthusiastic and vigorous. But how do we keep them safe? We never came up with an answer. I wish we had. I hope we will eventually reach the strength where if somebody fired you, some other guy in the group is going to come along and say, well, we can use Eddie at our place. So firing him won't do you any good. Or that we're strong enough that if, you know, ABC company fires Eddie, we boycott it. We have a daily picket around them. ABC company hates whites. Bring the doo-doo down on them. We're not strong enough yet, but that's what we should be looking for. Some of our worst enemies are our own race traitors. I've seen this. It's not as bad in your country, but I've seen a constant decline in support for freedom of speech over the last 40 years. I've been in the free speech battle for a long, long time, and it used to be if an issue came up, the opponent of free speech would say, no, I'm in favor of free speech, but nowadays there isn't even a but. Somebody will say, hey, free speech isn't hate speech, or hate speech isn't... No. Free speech is the right to state your opinion, whether it's intelligent or stupid or or malicious. You've got a right to state your opinion, and too many businesses don't respect that. I've been through that those battles for a long time, and one of the greatest stalwarts up here for not canceling meetings, even after he's being visited by the cops and the anti-racist people, it was an Iranian, and he'd been he served in the U.S. Air Force. Wow. He came up to Canada, and he said, "I believe in free speech." And the cops said, "Well, there could be trouble." He says, "If there's trouble, it's up to you to do something about it. And if they come on onto my parking lot, I'm going to take a baseball bat." "Well, you can't do that. You can't do that." He said, "Watch me." And so the meeting went ahead, and the first, I'll conclude the story. It's short.
Yes. I'll add a comment. We'll come back. Be right back, folks. This 2 hours just about gone, unfortunately. Be right back, folks.
Former Sheriff Richard Mack recounts in his book, The Proper Role of Law Enforcement, how he came to realize while working as a beat cop how wrong the all-too-common orientation of police officers is when they think of their job as being to write tickets and arrest people. Richard Mack tells of his personal transformation from by-the-number cop to constitution-conscious defender of citizen safety and freedoms. Learn what it really means to serve and protect. Purchase your copy at CSPOA.org. That's CSPOA.org.
Get ready to be part of something incredible. We're breaking barriers and delivering the powerful stories that mainstream media won't touch. Your support is what fuels our mission to revolutionize journalism and bring you the truth. Join our passionate community of changemakers by donating at libertynewsradio.com today. Together, we're creating the future of news.
This is Michael Hill, Chief of the League of the South. I listen to Blood River Radio, and you should too. In fact, you should be telling your friends, your family, and your associates to listen to Eddie Miller and the good folks at Blood River Radio. They stand resolutely for the preservation of white civilization, what we once called Christendom, and they stand against the ongoing campaign of white genocide. In these trying and uncertain times, it's more important than ever to speak and act in defense of our God, our people, and our civilization. Blood River Radio speaks the truth and speaks it boldly. I've been on this show many times as a guest, and I'm very proud of my association with you. May our just cause prevail. Hail victory.
I'll tell you one thing that every good soldier knows. The only thing that counts in the end is power. Naked, merciless force!
Dear Blood River Radio family, thank you so much for holding on. I think I might have delayed coming on a little bit, but that's okay. I'm human, but... Before Paul goes to what he was going to say, and we're going to write back to Paul, and we'll get back to Will, who's been on fire tonight as usual. But I've been asking Paul and Will during the break. I said, the Germans in the early 1930s were so prostrate, so weak and broke, poverty-stricken, and so demoralized and so hated. They were hated. And we talked about a few minutes ago, about an hour ago, I asked Paul and Will, who was the most hated by the international Jew in the world? Was it the German, the white German, or the white Russian? And that's a toss-up right there probably. But I was asking, I heard this statement. A reporter asked Adolf Hitler, our brother Adolf Hitler, who I think probably the greatest white man in the past 200 years, maybe ever, is certainly equal to anything we had in the Confederacy. But he was asked about, Herr Hitler, when you looked out at the German people, and it was just the German people were just a wreck, almost, they were unsalvageable. How did you how do you get enough optimism and get enough courage and energy to try to do the impossible to rescue these people? And he said, I looked out at the people. I didn't look at them as what they were. I looked at them as what they could be. So I asked Paul, how could we discover that secret that Brother Adolf Hitler, our Führer, how could we find out what was his formula to rescue these people? And why did he do it? And Paul, if you will, cover that and the other thing that you were going to cover, if you don't mind. And then when you get through, Will can take us out. Go ahead, Paul.
You pose a very good question, and it's hard to overestimate how bad the German people had been beaten down. They lost the war by stealth. They didn't lose it on the battlefield. They'd been bled white by reparations. Germany had been turned into a toilet bowl cesspool by largely Jewish corruption in the Weimar Republic, the sort of stuff that we see in the United States and Canada today, the transgendered, the deliberately spread confusion about sexuality and identity. And so they were in a bad shape. But I think what Hitler had going for him was he inculcated in the German people a sense of themselves as a people. And then he was able to lead them to, and we can do better. We can have things better for all of us as a people. But you first of all have to see yourselves as a people, not just individuals. And of course, he turned it around amazingly within a couple of years, full employment, the industry humming, the Autobahn or highway network being built, and prosperity for workers. Workers, for the first time ever, were granted holidays and the opportunity to take a cruise on a ship. And they didn't have to be wealthy, or a trip to the mountains to hike for health. And apparently, in the late 30s, people in Britain were shocked to find out that these hordes of tourists from Germany were workers. These weren't wealthy people. When England was still mired in hopeless unemployment and workers were not well paid, here were these German workers. They were only factory workers coming over, and they were by what we would call today, they were solidly middle class. They had some money in their back pocket to eat and go to museums and have reasonably decent hotels. So I think it was the inculcation in people of, we're a group, and I believe in you, and we don't have to be the mess that you were dragged through in the 20s. We can be better. And that is, I believe, what he did from my reading, and also from I spoke to people that have actually met Hitler. And of course, they're long since dead, but that's my conclusion.
Well, you know, and one more thing out there, I'll go to Will. Also, another thing he did, and I would give anything, if there's such a thing as a textbook that shows exactly, precisely, what Adolf Hitler and the National Socialists did with their economic system, because I've been told, you know, the National Socialists, Adolf Hitler, got off the Jewish bank standard. They kicked the Jewish bankers out. Also, I think they got off the gold standard. You know, somebody else who I was surprised who did not like the gold standard, correct me if I'm wrong, was Henry Ford. So I would love to know the economic system, exactly how it worked. I've heard it was based on a man's own skilled labor, but how? If anybody could come up, if there's such a thing as a textbook that talks about that, this shows exactly how that economic system worked. It was a miraculous economic system. And one thing, it kicked out the damn Jews, and it kicked out the fiat money system. But I would love to get my hands on that text. But that's one of the things that Adolf Hitler, the genius he was able to resurrect Germany out of the mire. And really, at that time, before the shooting war started, incidentally, well before the shooting war started, there was the international Jewry put out full page newspaper ads boycotting Germany. But I would like to know that economic system.
as soon that those ads appeared in January 1933, as soon as he was elected, international Jewry declared war on Hitler. So when people moan and groan about he persecuted the Jews, you want to say, well, are you sure? You know what you're talking about? Who declared war first on whom? And there's as they say on the dating sites, it's complicated. But there were a significant number of Jews. Yeah, there were a significant number of Jews who served in the Wehrmacht. There were Jewish generals, and again, one of these Germans who's long since dead told me that in his little community of Wuppertal, there were Jewish merchants that were there all through the war. They didn't get stuffed into a gas oven or something. So it's complicated. But we've only been given the cartoon version of history, unfortunately.
Well, I'll tell you what, it is complicated. Will, why don't you dive in here? You've been kind of quiet for a few minutes, but take us out, brother. Take us to the bar.
No, I'm taking it all in, and I'm thinking about what happened in the time frame that we're talking about in Germany, and I'm looking, at least in my mind's eye, of the United States and Canada to the north, and I'm digesting what Paul is talking about, and I'm coming up with a plan in my head of how do we apply this to our current situation. And one of the things that I really want to get out there is just the freedom from the fear. I think the integration of our society, this melting pot myth of us being surrounded, within our workplaces, in our school systems, whatever the case may be, I don't think that was done by accident. I think that was done as a war tactic of control towards our people. And what we have to do is get back to the idea of knowing neighbors, knowing people that are like us, that share our culture, that share our heritage, and right. what comes from that is a sense of strength in numbers, that you are not alone. If we take the time and actually have intelligent, honest conversations with people, I like to say, people have an itch. They just don't know where to scratch. They know things are wrong. They know things aren't right in the government as far as the system of how there's a two-tiered system and it's very unfavorable to our people. If we take the time to engage in meaningful conversation, you will be surprised at how many people actually line up with our beliefs. And I think once we start having those conversations, awareness comes out of that. Out of the awareness comes preparation for what is to come. And I think that gives us the strength that we need to start being more and more bold as far as our movement of saying our rights matter as well. And one of the things that we need, I just want to go back just a couple minutes. I know we're very, very close, is it has worked very well in the religious world of religious rights, of having very skilled attorneys that are willing to work pro bono to defend Christians against persecution. And I think the same would apply to us as far as you can call it a First Amendment or whatever you want to say here in the United States or Canada. But I have a right to speak out. I have a right to speak my beliefs. Your rights end where mine begin where yours end. You can't tell me what I believe and what I can say. And I think if we see these people that lose their jobs or are discriminated against because of their sincere held beliefs, if we had attorneys that were willing to go to the mat and defend these people, I think you would see less and less of that happening. But to my knowledge, guys, we don't really have that as far as it's a very taboo subject to have those type of spitfire attorneys that are willing to go to the mat for our cause. We need more of that.
Yeah, I unfortunately I think you're right, but it's certainly something to work toward.
Absolutely. Guys, you two fellows have really had a magnificent broadcast tonight. I'd like to thank both of you for coming in. We've run completely out of time for the second hour. I'm really amazed at the talent you two guys have, and I think it comes from a power above, from God Almighty. In fact, I'm sure it does. But anyway, I would like to thank you, Paul. Thank you, Will, for coming in and making Blood River Radio great tonight. And I will keep in contact with both of you guys. You two guys don't go very far, because our Blood River Radio family, we need you. people, we got to transfer into the third hour. We're going to break up the bitter ender himself, none other than Gene Andrews. So if you got time to go get some coffee, whatever. So be right back in about 4.5 minutes, folks. Yeah.